The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations from listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely online at kopn.org. Thank you. Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I'm Melinda Hamilgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission to connect the dots between food, health, and agriculture and find food truth. And I'm delighted to welcome back today Dr. Richard Raymond. He is the former Undersecretary for Food Safety at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, where he served from 2005 to 2008. Prior to joining USDA, Dr. Raymond was a family physician in rural Nebraska for 17 years. He became the state's first chief medical officer in 1999. Then, when Nebraska Governor Mike Johanns was named Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Dr. Raymond became his Undersecretary for Food Safety at USDA and the first MD to head up the Food Safety Inspection Service. While there, Dr. Raymond led initiatives that resulted in substantial policy changes for the Food Safety and Inspection Service, including the decision to publish the names of retailers that sold recalled meat. After leaving USDA, Dr. Raymond became a food safety and public health consultant. He was a blogger on food safety policy for 10 years for Meeting Place and Feedstuffs and was an occasional contributor to Food Safety News. Dr. Raymond also served as a consultant for several agriculture-related pharmaceutical companies. And last week, we had an opportunity to talk about food recalls and specifically E. coli, but we found ourselves needing more time to dive into salmonella, and that's what we'll be doing today. So welcome back, Dr. Raymond.
Thank you, Melinda.
So last week, we spoke about recalls, and anybody who wants to find out what is presently being recalled, or if there are any public health alerts, they can go to that FSIS website. But you told me something that I thought was very interesting, and that is that first, there's a difference between a recall and a public health alert. What is that difference?
Well, a recall can be initiated if there's an adulterant in the meat or if the product's been mislabeled. And when either one of those things occurs, the company will almost always voluntarily initiate a recall when requested by FSIS. In fact, they've never, ever turned down a request. They sometimes discuss it for a day or so, but they've always done the recall. And another thing about a recall, when a product is recalled, it cannot be sold in retail. Now, a public health alert is issued by the FSIS when they don't have the authority to ask for a recall. That would be if the meat is contaminated with a bacteria that has not been declared an adulterant. Also, sometimes they may not know exactly for sure what the product was that is causing an illness, and so they can't issue a recall, but they'll warn the public that maybe green leafy vegetables, for instance, are causing infections, but they don't know the exact root cause at that time. So public health alert is just to alert the public there is an issue. The FSIS has no authority at that time to go any steps further.
Are grocery stores required to post those public health alerts?
No, they are not. But in the last 10 to 15 years, grocery stores have really stepped up. And because of their coding, when you go through the checkout counter, they have a record of what you bought. And so when they have a recall for a product that they had sold, a lot of the large chains will notify all those customers that bought that product recently. They weren't doing that when I was at USDA. One company was the first one to do it while I was there, and they're very worried they would lose customers because they would suddenly know how much of their private information is potentially in the hands of the grocery store. But they do a good job now of notifying the public.
I appreciate that. That is a wonderful public health service.
It is.
All right. Now, salmonella is probably the number one killer in foodborne illnesses. Is that correct?
It is. Number one, bacterial.
But salmonella is not considered an adulterant while E. coli is. Why the difference?
I think there's a couple of reasons. One is E. coli is much more lethal. If a child gets E. coli, they're going to get very ill. They probably go into kidney failure, and a lot of them will unfortunately die. Salmonella generally speaking, is no more than diarrhea for a day or two in perfectly healthy adults. Young kids and the elderly and those that are immunocompromised by things like diabetes or multiple sclerosis or cancer, they're at a higher risk of getting a serious salmonella infection, but yet the mortality rate is pretty low. The CDC estimates that there's 1.3 million cases of salmonella per year, but only 400, I say only, I don't mean to downplay it, but 400 deaths. So that's a very small percentage.
I see.
So that's one of the reasons. The other reason is salmonella is much more difficult to eliminate, and to declare it an adulterant would force the poultry industry, particularly the poultry industry, to make some pretty radical changes, and that would be very expensive.
Okay, so when we talked about E. coli last week, you had mentioned that if you trace E. coli back, it's going to end up with a cow. It's a fecal contaminant, in other words.
Right.
Am I correct that salmonella is also a fecal contaminant?
Yes, it's in intestines of all animals. It's in our intestines. It's in chickens and pigs and cows. But not all salmonella are infectious to humans.
I see. All right, let's talk about a case from 2013. This was in California. California-based Foster Farms had an outbreak that sickened over 600 and hospitalized 38% of its victims, which is a number that's much higher than normal for salmonellosis, but no deaths. And the company at one point said it was not their fault. If people would only cook their chicken to 165 degrees, they should not get sick. Tell me about the Foster Farms case.
Well, it's pretty much as you described it. It was ongoing for quite some time. People continued to get ill. The Food Safety Inspection Service issued multiple public health alerts because they had no authority to make Foster Farms recall that product. And the grocery stores did not need to remove it from their shelves because salmonella, as we've already said, has not been declared an adulterant as of today. And so there was no authority to reduce the risk of being exposed other than the public health alert suggesting to people, don't buy Foster Farms chicken.
Well, if anything, this emphasizes a point you made last week, and that is that you cook with a thermometer. And if we're going to cook meat, and we probably should assume, as you said last week, that the meat you buy in the grocery store or anywhere is going to have some bacteria on it. And so to be safe, it's critical that we follow those cooking guidelines. So 165 degrees for chicken. What is it going to take to make salmonella an adulterant?
The FSIS, via the Federal Meat Inspection Act, has that authority. As I said, there's multiple reasons that they have not gone down that road yet, but they are very close. I would anticipate within the next 12 months and probably shorter, they are going to declare salmonella to be an adulterant when it is found in breaded, stuffed, raw chicken products. Think chicken cordon bleu or chicken Kiev, stuffed with broccoli and cheeses. Two of the reasons that they will take this next step is that A, it's hard to get an internal temperature when you got cheese and broccoli there. You can't, it's hard to measure the chicken meat as opposed to a chicken breast. Secondly, those products are generally pre-browned and they look like they've been cooked on a grill. They sometimes have the char marks. And that leads the consumer to think, I just need to warm it up in my microwave. I don't need to worry about temperature. So I think they're going after a particular product that is at higher risk than, say, an intact chicken breast.
What will the industry need to do to clean up the environment? I am assuming that there's resistance from the industry. What are the changes that will have to happen?
Well, you're exactly right. Of course, there's been a lot of pushback from the National Chicken Council and the Turkey Federation opposed to this. Again, the comments are made, they just have to cook the chicken. Well, the FSS is saying, yeah, but it's hard to judge if this chicken is properly cooked when it's stuffed. And therefore, the industry, one of the things that will happen is they'll start checking the poultry product that's going to go into the stuffed product. They'll start testing that for salmonella before they ever stuff it. And if it tests positive, they will cook it and move it into something else rather than running the risk of FSIS testing the product once it's been made. And then they have to recall hundreds of thousands of pounds of chicken cordon bleu, for instance. So they're going to try to prevent it by more testing.
Okay, so FSIS has changed how they inspect chicken plants as a result of the 2013 fiasco. What has changed?
The new poultry inspection system, one of the things they have done, and it's voluntary with the industry, not every plant has done this yet, but many have. The plant can hire their own inspectors on the line. FSIS will still inspect every carcass at the end of the line, but in the meantime, those inspectors that were looking at carcasses will now be in the plant doing verification testing. They'll be doing more salmonella testing. They'll be making sure the plant's HACCP plans are intact and being followed. And for plants that have an inordinate amount of positive tests for salmonella, they will get a public health risk assessment and possibly a food safety assessment. And trust me, those plants don't want either one of those things, because that's a small army of FSIS inspectors coming in and literally turning over every document they can to see why this plant's having more trouble. So they desperately want to avoid that.
Right. You know, I think most of us, when we think about salmonella, we think about poultry. But I remember it just in going through the FSIS data on recalls and public health warnings that salmonella is actually present on quite a bit of other meat products. So, for example, the most recent recall I saw was going on in January of 2024, and it had to do with ready-to-eat charcuterie products due to possible salmonella contamination. So it's anywhere where there can be fecal contamination. It's not specific to chicken. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct, but it's also not limited to animals. Here's a couple numbers for your listeners. First of all, in the last numbers that I could find, I think it was 2021, maybe 23% of human cases were caused by poultry. These are Centers for Disease Control numbers. 23% poultry, 38% meat and poultry. That'd be primarily beef, pork, and poultry. So about 40% or 4 out of 10 are related to animals. But the others are generally fruits and vegetables that have been contaminated by bird feces or irrigation water that was contaminated, or you name it. There's multiple ways for vegetables and fruits to get contaminated with salmonella, but they do account for about half of all cases. And then there's other cases by contact with animals, such as pets and zoos and even farm animals. Just by petting an animal, you may be in contact with their fecal material.
Right. Well, I'm glad you mentioned fruits and vegetables, and I realize that that's not something that FSIS covers. However, I rarely go a year without hearing about some sort of salmonella contamination on cantaloupes. What is it about cantaloupes that makes them so risky?
I can't answer that question. I do not know. I don't know what their irrigation systems are. If it's overhead irrigation, that would be a potential for contamination. But you're right. They've had some listeria problems also out here in Colorado with cantaloupe. And I don't know why they are, say, more than watermelons, for instance.
Well, you know, I think the rind is a little bit more porous, perhaps.
Well, that's true.
You know, it can catch and hold on to things more. I always tell consumers that it is really important before you cut through a piece of fruit to wash that rind carefully, because if there is fecal material there, the chances are you can wash it off with a little bit of scrubby and water. And then I know when I go to a conference, there is always a bowl of pre-cut fruit. We can also buy it from a convenience package when you go into the supermarket. How safe are those?
Well, you're definitely at a higher risk of any kind of contamination, be viral or bacterial, on pre-cut vegetables and fruits, because once you break that skin, you've lost the protection of the bacteria getting into the product itself.
Right. It's a great way to introduce bacteria, simply slicing through that rind. People need to know that those kinds of products, while they may be convenient, they do come with a higher risk. Let me take one break and remind our listeners that if you are just joining us, you are tuned into Food Sleuth Radio, and we are speaking with Dr. Richard Raymond. He is the former Undersecretary for Food Safety at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service. And we spoke last week primarily focused on E. coli and cattle, but today we are expanding our conversation to talk about salmonella. Now, I do want to mention an article that probably a lot of consumers saw, and it had to do with salmonella bacteria in ground chicken samples that were tested. These are folks from Consumer Reports, they go into supermarkets, they pick up packages, and they test for bacterial contamination. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, I would never eat ground chicken, quite frankly. Never have, never will. The FSIS acceptable levels of contamination when they test in plants for ground chicken products is 25%. In other words, one out of every four tests can be positive, and that plant gets a passing grade. I mean, that's just pure fact. And for that reason, I just won't eat ground chicken.
Well, that's a really good piece of advice for our listeners, especially those who have some sort of immunocompromised state or children, for example. I know there seems to be this halo around poultry, right? The white meat, and that it's more healthful for our cardiovascular systems. But I think it's really important for people to understand that when we grind meat, we introduce bacteria from the outside into the inside of that product.
Yeah, plus you're combining multiple chickens into one chicken patty as opposed to one chicken breast. So, you know, if one out of 10 chickens is contaminated and all 10 of those go into the ground chicken product, you got contaminated product. But if one chicken is contaminated and you turn that into two chicken breasts, that's two breasts that are contaminated, and the other 18 from the other 9 chickens are not probably going to be contaminated. Anything ground is combining multiple animal products.
Is there anything else you want to let our listeners know about chicken and salmonella, or any meat and salmonella?
Well, there's one thing that I think is important, that, and I'm a little defensive here, but FSIS is constantly criticized, and that Consumer Report article that you just mentioned says there that the USDA needs to shut down plants when they have contaminated poultry products. And FSIS has acceptable levels. And if, as long as you are at that level or below, you're rated a 1 or a 2. But if you're above, you're a 3. And that's when the intensive inspections pick up. They tried shutting down a plant called Supreme Beef. USDA, the FSIS, did back in 1999 because they had three times failed their salmonella sets. 3 times in a row. And they had done nothing to correct it. So they shut them down. They sued the USDA, they went to court, and they won. Court says, no, it's a naturally occurring bacteria. Therefore, it's not an adulterant. Therefore, you can't shut the plant down. So that goes back to your first question, is why hasn't it been declared an adulterant? That's part of it right there. FSIS got sued and lost by a plant that had a horrible safety record.
Well, I can see why there would be reluctance to take those kinds of precautionary steps then. But how can we find out which plants are doing a better job?
It's on the FSIS website. We started listing them back in 2007, 2008, sometime around then when I was the undersecretary. And one thing I need to also point out to your listener, when I took my job, the contamination rate of whole chicken carcasses was 16%. And I was told by the secretary my very first day, do something about that. It's embarrassing. And so we lowered the performance levels, acceptable levels, and we told the plants we're going to list them so the consumer groups will see who the bad plants are. And of course, there was huge pushback, but we did it. And those numbers went from 16% in the 3 years I was there down to about 6%. So the industry is making progress. The bad news is the number of infections has not gone down. The industry is doing a better job. I don't want the consumers to think they're not trying. They're doing a better job. The graphs are pretty dramatic, but it hasn't changed the infection rate. So we need to do more for consumers, education, use the thermometers. I think FSIS is going down the right step to declare salmonella to be an adulterant in certain products. And I'm sure that will be expanded as time goes on. But we still, as I said last week, you can't guarantee any raw meat or poultry to be sterile.
That's exactly right. All right. Now, you had mentioned to me that the United Kingdom dropped their human illnesses by 70%. After requiring vaccination of laying hens, and Denmark has not reported one illness from poultry since 2011. Can we not also take the same kind of precautionary steps that are being taken in the EU?
If those steps would be taken in the United States, it would have to be voluntary by the industry at this particular point in time. There is no federal agency that has the authority to go onto the farm and say, do this or do that. UK, EU, they have the authority, central governmental authority, to tell the chicken industry, you must vaccinate all your laying hens. Denmark also, if they have a flock that is heavily contaminated, they'll cull that flock. They will exterminate all those birds and pay the farmer for his or her loss with taxpayer dollars. And that's why they don't have any cases. I mean, they're very vigilant on farm, and we don't have that authority.
Well, all right. I want to talk to you about some of your personal habits. It's always interesting to talk to people who are really close to an industry and find out what they do. I remember being at a food safety conference, and there was a gentleman there who inspected ice machines around the state. And he said, I'm never going to put ice from an ice machine in a drink. So it's that kind of awareness that we don't get usually unless we're having a firsthand conversation. So we had shared some items that you and I probably wouldn't ever eat again. And last week we spoke about raw or undercooked ground beef. I think that's good common sense. What about any kind of raw food like raw oysters or raw fish? You know, sushi is so popular.
Yeah, I've never been a sushi fan, and it's not necessarily because of worrying about a foodborne illness. I just don't like the idea of raw fish. I used to love raw oysters, but the rate of a bacteria called Vibrio is going up every year, and people think it's because of the warming of the Gulf waters. I don't know that for sure, but it makes some sense. But the rate of Vibriosis is steadily going up, and it'll take an old man who's had too many drinks in his life and just ruin his liver. So I'd rather give up raw oysters and give up my evening cocktail. I don't eat raw fish or oysters. I don't eat sprouts anymore either after having been in one or two of those plants. Those people are trying their darndest, but it's a warm, humid, damp environment. That's just perfect for growing bacteria. And so no matter how hard they try, I just don't trust sprouts anymore. I used to. Another one is raw, unpasteurized milk. I do not understand why adults feed their children raw milk. I know they say, well, it'll help prevent cystic fibrosis and autism, and there's just not a science behind that. We do still see a lot of foodborne illnesses from drinking raw milk. Pasteurization was one of the biggest things we did a century ago to help protect kids from getting sick from milk. I've already mentioned I won't eat ground chicken. Just never will. And then one last thing, I won't eat raw eggs, like in making cookie dough or homemade ice cream. Those are two things that I will not eat. But I will tell you this, I love dipping toast into an egg yolk that's runny. And I know that's undercooked egg as far as foodborne illnesses, but that's one thing I have not given up.
And is salmonella the issue with the raw eggs?
Yes. Salmonella starts in the yolk, and then when the chicken is hatched, if that yolk had salmonella in it from the laying hen, then the chicken grows up with bacterial salmonella that can harm humans. That's why in the UK and the EU, they vaccinate the laying hens so they don't have salmonella with certain strains that cause human infections. They still have some salmonella, but they're not pathogenic. So they vaccinate the layers so the eggs don't have salmonella.
That seems to make such good sense.
Yeah, it does.
Let's talk about the raw sprouts for a moment, because I had read years ago that it was the seeds that were already contaminated. And I believe it was with salmonella.
It's an FDA regulated product. I'm not an expert on it. I was involved in a malpractice case once I was done at the USDA, is why I was in a couple of plants trying to learn more about the industry. And I really don't remember where the contaminant comes from. It could, if it's a seed, it's probably true. But the point is, the environment then where that seed germinates is dark, warm, moist, and bacteria love to grow in that kind of an environment.
Right. Well, I'll try to find a source on that and provide a link for our listeners, but it's just a heads up to know that raw sprouts could be problematic.
They have been.
All right. Why are pre-cut vegetables something that we should be wary of?
Well, let's take a carrot. For instance, there's a thin layer of skin on a carrot, and it may have salmonella on it or E. coli or whatever. And as long as it's not cut, it doesn't get through that skin. And if you buy that whole carrot, take it home and rinse it and scrub it a little bit, you can get rid of that contamination, and then you peel it and then you slice it. But if that's done upstream at an industry level, they may not wash every carrot carefully, and they may not peel every carrot carefully. But once they cut that skin, if it hasn't been cleaned, then that bacteria can then grow on the raw surface.
Right. Sort of like those fruit cups that you can get with the cut fruit. It's the same with the pre-cut vegetables.
Exactly.
Yeah. And anytime I see something that's been pre-washed in a bag, I always say to myself, just wash it again.
Yeah. Yes. I don't trust the pre-wash either. I mean, it doesn't take long to wash it yourself.
Exactly. I do want to get back to the raw milk, because there are different state regulations where
Yeah.
sometimes people can buy like a cow share in order to get raw milk. But like you, I share your concern about bacteria that can be in that milk. And I'm really glad that you are a family practice physician because you have the ability to understand vulnerable populations.
True. Actually have a daughter who lives with multiple sclerosis, and she gets an infusion every 6 months, and it causes her immunoglobulins to drop down to very low levels. And she works in a preschool, so she's constantly exposed to all these bugs, and it just compromises her health.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no need to take a risk. I know there are groups that promote all kinds of health benefits to raw milk, but I think it's important for us always to weigh risk and benefit. And it's very helpful to have a physician of your stature to help warn people. All right, we've just got a couple of minutes. I want to give the floor to you. Is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with?
There's one thing as we've been talking, I've been thinking about. I may have misled your listeners a little bit when I talked about the new poultry inspection plan, where the FSIS has removed some of the inspectors from the line and replaced them with industry workers. And there's been a lot of debate about this from Consumer Reports and others saying you're getting rid of your responsibility. And that's not true. What those inspectors on the line were doing were looking for broken limbs, wings, and bruises. They were doing quality control for the industry. Basically, the chicken flies by the inspector every 2 seconds. And in those 2 seconds, the inspector can't see salmonella or any other pathogens. What they can see is a sick-looking bird, grossly sick-looking bird, like it's been septic. It doesn't have any color of its meat. Or they pull it off the line because it's got a broken drumstick, and the chicken industry doesn't want broken drumsticks in the grocery stores. So they're doing quality control. Now we're letting industry do the quality control so we can free up our inspectors to do more risk-based inspections, like looking for salmonella by culturing and so forth. But there's still an inspector at the end of that line, so if one of those septic birds slipped by the industry employee, they'll still see it. You can see it from across the room. So it's not increased the risk, it's trying to decrease the risk from the public health factors that can't be seen with the naked eye.
Right. All right. Well, I will provide a link to the Food Safety and Inspection Service, also Food Safety News. Any other links that you think I should provide for our listeners who want to learn more about food safety?
The National Chicken Council, of course, is going to have a biased view, but I think the National Chicken Council and the Turkey Federation are both good links. And also the CDC, they've got a wonderful salmonella page also.
I totally agree. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
All right, we've got to close. I want to thank our listeners for joining us. Remind everyone that Food Sleuth Radio is produced by Dan Hemmelgarn for KOPN in Columbia, Missouri. But most of all, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Richard Raymond. He is the first MD to hold the position of Undersecretary for Food Safety at USDA. He is now a consultant for public health and food safety. And I want to thank you so much for your time and for sharing your insights with us.
It's been my pleasure.